you're suffering from stress, anxiety, lack of sleep, inflammation, pain management, kind of like I am pretty much all the time, I highly encourage you to check out cocanacare.com. And that's C-O for Colorado. It's a Colorado-based company. Canna, C-A-N-N-A, care.com. They make incredible CBD oil that's derived from all natural, high quality industrial hemp. It's legal in all 50 states and is USDA certified 100% organic. And there's absolutely no THC content in the oil. It's non-GMO and contains no heavy metals or pesticides. They've been gracious enough to help support us during this time. So if you're wanting to try CBD oil for any of those reasons I mentioned and a lot more on their website, highly encourage you just to give it a shot. Check it out. Go to cocanacare.com. And again, that's C-O for Colorado, C-A-N-N-A, care.com.
I actually ran out of water, and I was probably without water for 6 hours. It was very dry. I was in New Mexico. I ended up consulting my maps, and I found where there's supposed to be a little stream when it's wet in the winter. And I found a big culvert pipe that had some water, and I ended up filtering some highly questionable water.
This is the Adventure Sports Podcast, where we hear stories of adventure from every corner of the planet. We interview all sorts of folks who are using their sport to explore the world around them and give you the inspiration you need to get out there and have some fun. Oh, man. As you heard in the little snippet at the beginning, running out of water can make you do some questionable things. And in fact, I did that same route that Jim Goodyear did. This is a revisited episode, by the way, doing the Tour Divide, which is on the Great Divide mountain bike route. I did that quite a while ago, and I ran out of water too out in the desert. And I remember there, unfortunately, on the trail, there being a ton of trash. Literally looked like people just dumped their trash out. And inside that trash was a lot of water bottles. And I was so thirsty, so kind of desperate, I guess you could say. It had been about 5 or 6 hours in the sun without any water and still about 30 miles from town. And I was looking for water bottles out there in the trash to get some water because I was getting a little bit panicked. It was an area you could tell there wasn't going to be any other water source. And so I've been there, haven't had to filter anything like that out. But we are covering this episode today talking about the Great Divide mountain bike route because a good friend of the show, Andy Stout, is out on the route right now, and he said he's been listening to the show, being inspired by it, and I just wanted to give him some practical, kind of really applicable advice about his route. He's out there in Montana or Idaho somewhere going south, and if you don't know, the Great Divide mountain bike route is the route, and there's a race every year on it called the Tour Divide, and obviously this year it's not happening just because of COVID and everything, but it runs from Canada to Mexico along pretty much the continent divide, very, very close to the hiking trail, but it's all the routes that bikes can do. And so it's incredible. It's about 2,800 miles. It changes every year as, you know, little parts are added here and there. But overall, it's a really long, really incredible route and ends at the Mexican border if you're going south. But anyway, just wanted to shout out to Andy. If you remember Andy, he was on the show on episode, actually, let me check, 534, and he was just talking about bike tours and just kind of some of the adventures he's done. Great guy. He posts a ton to his Instagram story specifically, so I highly encourage you, go follow him at Stout About on Instagram. He's posting about the adventure, and I can tell you already some of these images are just, I mean, it's gorgeous. So if you're not getting out there this year for whatever reason, maybe it's COVID, maybe it's something else, but I encourage you to check it out because he definitely makes you feel like you're there. So Andy, hope you're staying safe, man. Enjoy. And yeah, thanks for asking for some more inspiration because I chose this episode just for you. And so if you're out there and you want to do an adventure and maybe you want to hear a story from someone who's done your adventure before, reach out. We'd love to shout it out in the replayed episodes every Thursday. But anyway, we'll be coming at you on Monday with a brand new episode. Have a great weekend. Everybody stay safe. And yeah, keep getting out there and having fun.
The Tour Divide is over 2,700 miles of self-supported time trial endurance riding along the Great Divide mountain bike route stretching between Banff, Alberta, Canada, and the U.S.-Mexico border in Antelope Wells, New Mexico. The route was created in 1997 by the Adventure Cycling Association. For 19 years now, bikepackers have been tackling this route, with top riders finishing in just over 2 weeks, while others don't make it at all. Jim Goodyear is on the show with us today to fill us in on the experience and the mental test that the Tour Divide provides. Jim, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Travis. Happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm happy to have you. So, you know, I recently learned about the Tour Divide, and I've become really intrigued with this ride. I didn't realize it existed. This is a self-supported ride in the sense that you absolutely can't have any help from anybody, not even people shipping stuff to you. I mean, you have to use commercial shippers, you have to use lodging and, you know, and everything. You can't have a van pull up and basically allow you to sleep in it, anything like that, right?
That's correct. I mean, this genre of racing is fairly new. It's self-supported racing. So the only thing you can use are commercially available services. So basically, you are racing and taking care of all of your issues in between supply points or these small towns. So you have to make sure you're carrying enough water, or you need to have enough ability to repair your bike, to carry enough food to get you to the next stop. So it's a completely, the logistics of this type of racing can add a lot of stress to what you're doing while you're out there on the Tour Divide.
Yeah, that's cool. I think that's the one thing that really drew me to the idea of it, because I've always, ever since I was a little kid, I always wanted to figure out some, you know, logistically, you know, sane way of packing stuff on a mountain bike and just going out for days on end, and essentially what bike packing has become. And then I saw that you guys do this, this 2,700 mile ride, essentially bike packing and supporting yourselves. I think it's such a cool idea.
It is. I think, it's cool, but the practicality of it, I mean, I told my wife there was a time when I think I was attracting flies from three counties away because, I mean, you go without showering, you're carrying just a minimal amount of clothes. The only shoes I had were my cycling-specific shoes. So, I mean, you have one rain jacket, one base layer underneath that, and you're just going on the minimal amount to get you there. And you figure, when I started in Banff, it was, you know, low 40s and raining for the first 2 days. My feet were wet constantly. By the time I finished 3 weeks later, 22 days later, Antelope Wells was 107 degrees. It was sweltering hot. So, I mean, there's a big swing in weather while you're riding the 2,700 miles, and you got to be able to prepare for all of that.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, I definitely wanted to bring up the weather fluctuations later in the discussion. Sure. About it, because you just to be able to have to prepare for that kind of stuff and not have so much room to put stuff on, it's got to be very careful preparation.
That's right.
But let's back up and let's start with you and how it is you got into cycling. I think I read that it was an ACL replacement that basically kicked off your career. Huh?
That's right. I grew up playing a lot of soccer, some baseball early on. And I was playing, you know, I'm 48 years old. I was playing in some competitive men's leagues, and I eventually, in a pickup game, tore my ACL. So that, I figured that was pretty good to go that long without having a major knee injury. But part of my rehab, I owned a mountain bike, and I decided to just get on a trainer and start spinning. Eventually, I decided to hang up the soccer boots and start riding on the roads around North Texas, and found some clubs. And I never thought there would be a sport that would kind of satisfy my need for, you know, just competition to really push myself. And then also at the same time, camaraderie, because I didn't see cycling as a team sport. Found a good team to work with in Caden Cyclery here in North Texas. They own three shops here, and really took off. I just started doing some mountain biking, did the road races around Dallas area. And then a few years back, I'd seen this documentary called Ride the Divide. The Tour Divide is still considered an underground race. There's no formal sanctioning body. There's no formal there's no entry fee at all. You have to pay a fee in order to have your GPS tracked, but it's still an underground race. And I saw this documentary called Ride the Divide, and all of a sudden, that came back to me as I started cycling a lot. you know, was always in the back of my head and decided that I was eventually going to, you know, tackle this big epic adventure.
Yeah, and I read that, you know, instead of a race being organized and taking entry fees, this is more of a community organized event where in reality, you can do this race, this time trial, any time of the year, you know, assuming you're not trekking through, you know, a whole bunch of snow. You can do it north to south, south to north. You can do it any time of the year and yes. register a time, right?
Correct. There is the second Friday in June is what they call the Grand Depart. And that takes you could take place at Banff or Antelope Wells. The vast majority are in Banff. So there's kind of this big party and send-off. And most of the riders will ride at that time. But any time during the year, I couldn't do that because of some commitments. I decided to do an individual time trial. Some people say that's a little more risky, obviously. It's a little more challenging because there aren't any other riders around me.
Sure.
And I didn't see any other race. I saw one other racer heading northbound finishing the day I took off. Other than that, I didn't see any other racers. So, yeah, it's a honor system. When you decide to race it, you send a letter of intent to a gentleman and let you declare that you're going to abide by the rules. And it's self-policing for the most part, and you follow those rules. You do register. You have a spot tracker. So that allows people to see you on the route. It sends updates anywhere from 2.5 minutes to every hour. Where you are, so they make sure, you know, the community makes sure you're staying on route. If you go off route, you have to pick the route up where you left it. So if you broke down or you needed to go off route to get supplies, you could see that. So there is a way to audit, you know, that you followed the official Tour Divide route while you're out there. But yeah, I love the fact that still has that underground status. I think it's getting more popular, so there's a lot more information out there. There are places online where you can get information on what the route's like at different sections. You can get good information on, you know, bike setup, bike packing gear. So I think the people that are doing it today do it based off – we have the benefit of a lot of people that have ridden this and raced this ahead of us.
Yeah, it seems like it's more of a ride for, you know, of course you get bragging rights, but more of a ride for friends and just to basically ride against yourself and make sure that you can put up with it and compete and make it through the whole course.
Yeah, I think, you know, I went into this, I knew I wasn't going to set a record. I mean, the record was 14 days prior to this year. This year, a gentleman set a new record at 13 days, 20 hours. So, I mean, those are some exceptional athletes out there. And I think most of the people that are racing it, I think there are probably around 170 that raced it this year. About 40 to 45% of those people they drop out. They don't finish. And I tell folks, I think the people that are racing this aren't necessarily racing it to win. We're racing it to see if we could finish. We're racing it, you know, we're racing against weather. We're racing against, you know, our own fears. We're racing to discover new things about ourselves. And I think that's the big appeal of this race and why people go out there and do it. And I think they're all ages. I mean, 60, 70 year olds down to, you know, early 20 year old racers out there. So covers a large demographic.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Well, let's talk about the route itself. Back in 1997, I believe, is when it was first devised and then first ridden in 99, from what I read. It covers essentially the Continental Divide, Banff, Alberta, down through Montana, Idaho, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico. There's some pretty grueling terrain in there. There's no doubt about yes. that. So let's talk about your experiences on the trail. And obviously, like we're saying, we're overcoming, you know, our mental challenge at the same time. So,
yeah, I think all my preparation. So I figure I spent about a year preparing for this. I was doing the normal race circuit in North Texas, which kept me in shape. But, you know, leading up to this, the 6 months prior, I was really preparing for a physical effort, which it was. I mean, it beats your body up. I mean, you're going without sleep. You're climbing. So I think they say the elevation gain is 200,000 feet of climbing, which is equivalent to climbing Mount Everest from the South base camp like 10 times. So I mean I couldn't ride in North Texas for 5 years and probably get that kind of elevation in climbing. Now if I lived in Colorado maybe. But it's an insane amount of climbing, and not only the climbing, but I would look. So each day I got to a point where I'd look at my maps and kind of understand, okay, I'm going to try to go 150 miles today. What's that look like? And I'd look at the elevation. Okay, I have three big mountain passes all over 10,000 to 11,000 feet. And so you kind of set these goals. Okay, I got to conquer the first pass, the second, the third pass. But what you don't realize on top of that elevation gain is some of these roads are just impossible to ride. My bike and gear, my dry weight was probably around 46 pounds. With water and food, I was probably right at 50 pounds or over 50 pounds, I think. And you're going over just rocks that are impossible to ride on. So I don't know what the amount is, but I figure I hiked my bike. I pushed my bike probably up, 20 miles worth of trail, I'd estimate. So a lot more walking than I thought I would be doing. And the first few days I did so much of that, my Achilles tendons were, I developed two knots on the back of my Achilles tendons because I was wearing racing mountain bike shoes, which are carbon fiber soles and absolutely no flex in them at all. So my Achilles tendons were taking the brunt of that, and I had to adjust my stride and shorten my stride. I probably would have chosen different shoes if I had known how much walking I was going to be doing, but it was miserable at times. And you're out there and you hate the trail. There are times when you absolutely hate that trail. And at the same time, you love what you're doing. You love the challenge. You're like, okay, my legs aren't strong enough to ride up this hill. You're going to walk me up this hill. So let's go, legs. And you just have to get up the hill.
Yeah, that was my first thought when you said you trekked up to 20 miles. I thought, in mountain bike shoes, and I use regular mountain bike shoes, of a low top with cleats in it. But man, you're talking about a carbon fiber sole. Yeah, that gives no give. And you don't even know to train for that. Like, how do you train for hiking in rigid mountain bike shoes?
That's right. So that was something I wasn't quite ready for that caught me by surprise.
Yeah, that's a good one to follow in the tips and tricks category there.
For sure. A lot of guys will tell you to buy shoes that are one or two sizes bigger just to account for the swelling that you're going to get. So I thought about that. I had some insoles. I could take them out if I had the edema or some of the swelling in my feet. I really didn't have a problem with that. But I just didn't think about the climbing and having a more flex, a sole that flexed a little bit.
Yeah, no doubt. So let's talk about the terrain itself. This is predominantly off-road stuff, right?
Yes. You're on pavement going into some of these smaller or some of the larger towns. So there is some pavement, but the vast majority of the time you're in the wilderness, high mountain, high desert. You're on fire trails, gravel roads, some off-road trails. There were trails that were definitely designed for like motorcycles and off-road vehicles that we were riding on. But it's a series of trails that just connect. The Adventure Cycling Association has mapped it all out, and we follow that. And they're just, the beauty that you see out there. Now, you're experiencing pain, and there were times when I was in the pain cave for days at a time, it felt like. But at the same time, I was enjoying the views because, I saw moose. I saw a badger. I saw a lot of cows out there, obviously, grazing in the high country. Saw black bear, brown bear, saw a lot of elk. So you're out there in the middle of nowhere. And sometimes the roads are good, and there are times when the washboard is just miserable to ride on, and you have to ride on it.
Yeah, I'll bet to the emotional swings are extreme highs and extreme lows, and probably many of those within the same 5 minutes.
Yeah, it is. I was saying that earlier. I prepared for this physical challenge, but I had no idea how mentally draining and the mental aspects and not just mental aspects, but when you're that tired and that fatigued and you're going that long, what happens is mentally you start getting weaker, and then that spirals into this, just this emotional state where you're like a child and you're mad and you're angry. And it's like, you know, I'm the one that chose to do this. I know where the finish line is. So get control of yourself, Jim. So you have a lot of really good conversations with your handlebars while you're out there on the trail. But yeah, so what happens is there were three times where I rode 250 miles without stopping.
Wow.
You know, maybe an hour, and the next day I was worthless, and I should have known that. I pushed myself too hard, and then you pay for it the next day. But what happens is you just go hard physically, and then you get into this mental state where you're like a robot, and that's okay. But then you start making mistakes. Every year when the Grand Depart starts, there are some forums that they'll start a lost and found forum. And I was actually making fun of people this year. And I was showing my wife, I was reading all people leaving their phones and then saying, hey, any racers on this leg of the race, if you see a phone at this spot, try to pick it up and try to get it back. Or there was one woman who said she lost her phone and somebody found it. And then she said somebody had stolen her jacket and I think a sleeping bag. And it turns out she left her sweet roll open and things were just falling out along the route.
Oh, no.
And I was kind of laughing at that, making fun of that, but little did I know I would start doing similar things because you're so fatigued that you don't realize what you're doing. I'd lost my jacket twice. I lost a pair of Oakley sunglasses. I lost my pump. I lost a glove. I mean, so you just start making these mental mistakes when you're that fatigued and you're not eating, you know, you're not getting the type of nutrition you're used to. You're not getting enough sleep. And, yeah, I saw that happen to me while I was out there.
Yeah, and that goes back to you talking about doing it on your own instead of part of the Great Depart, because you're out there and it's not like you're carrying spares of many things. I mean, maybe you have a pair of spare gloves, but not pumps, not phones, not that kind of stuff. So you start leaving that stuff. And you talk about being mentally exhausted. Now you're mentally exhausted and a little worried about your ability to survive out there.
That's it. I went 2 days without my pump. Now I do carry two or three CO cartridges so I could still air up a tire. And I had one flat. So it's like you don't realize the drain and the stress that puts on you. So you're riding along. I didn't have my pump when I was repacking. I got a jacket or something and I realized my pump was gone. So what happens is you have to be real careful mentally that you don't go into a real negative place, because you're riding on this trail. It's beautiful. Your legs feel decent. You're going and you're like, what happens if this, you know, I'm like, okay, I only have a couple CO cartridges. What if I run out of those, you know? And you can go into a pretty dark place. And when you're that negative, you know, it's hard to be real productive. And so you got to rein it back in and say, okay, I got two CO cartridges. I have two more spare tubes. I'm okay. And if that goes down, I'm going to have to do what they say and stuff my tube with grass and see if I can get to a place where I can repair it. But you got to really control yourself mentally in those types of situations. It's when you're doing an individual time trial, my fork started making some noise on a couple legs, and that's all I could think about. I'm like, okay, what happens if my fork breaks? Because I had a suspension fork. A lot of guys now are doing it with completely rigid bikes. No suspension in the back, no suspension in the front. I had a suspension fork and started making a lot of noise. And again, I probably wasted a lot of nervous energy worrying about that. And it got me through the race fine.
Yeah, I'll bet. That's interesting. They're doing it with rigid suspension now. Is that more for longevity, wear and tear on the bike during the
trip? Yeah. I think they're doing it because it simplifies the bike, and they don't have to worry about a mechanical breakdown, and they're doing it for weight. Rigid fork's going to be a lot lighter. So it's all trying to get your bike and your kit down to the lowest amount of weight possible if you're going to be racing it. And there are I don't know how many, there are a lot of people that will tour the Grand Divide, particularly up kind of northern Colorado, a lot of people in Montana, and a lot of people in Canada. You see them bikepacking, and they're carrying a lot of gear. We're talking 60, 70-pound bikes with big pannier racks and right. You know, camp stoves and coffee, and they all have gray smiles on their face because they're enjoying themselves. And I come up on them, and they know exactly, just by the look of my rig, they know that I'm built for speed. And so people can go out there and enjoy themselves, but there is something about racing it and pushing yourself to limits, and that's what I wanted to do, and that's what the 170-plus people did this year when they declared they were going to race the Tour Divide.
Yeah, no, I totally get it. I would be the touring person with the, you know, the 150-pound outfit.
Yeah,
out there with a smile on my face.
I mean, there's something to that. I mean, I think doing an individual time trial, I stopped, and every time I ran into somebody that was touring, I tried to take a picture. I spent a couple minutes with them if they wanted to talk, and they were always, you know, appreciative of that. But it would be nice to have a cup of coffee. I told my dad I'd love to go back and tour the Montana section with a fly rod.
Yeah.
Because I love to fly fish, and I could see myself just kind of riding, putting in some miles, and then just saying, you know what, that looks like a great stream, and then going, you know, wetting a fly.
Oh, yeah. Sounds good to me. All right. Let's talk about the bike itself. I mean, obviously these days, mountain bikes, or any bikes for that matter, can vary in such vast ranges. What is it you rode? You said it was rigid, so you didn't have any suspension. So what is your bike, and how is it outfitted in order to carry the bare essentials but not be too heavy?
Right. So most people are riding hardtail mountain bikes. I rode a Scott's Scale 910. That was the model. It had a Fox suspension fork. The weight of my bike is a carbon fiber bike. The weight of my bike with the pedals and no bags or anything was 24 pounds. And then what I did was I equipped that with what are called Jones Loop H-bars. So it's a handlebar that gives me multiple positions. A lot of people use this handlebar setup for bike packing. And then on top of that, I put some aero bars to give me some even more, give me just different positions on the bike so that I could rest my shoulders or my back and allow me to keep going without any fatigue. So that was the basic bike setup. Then for the packs, what we usually do, anyone that's doing ultra racing, a seat bag is necessary. So it's a bag that hangs off of your seat and your seat post. And that carries a lot of the weight. That's where you're putting some of your tools, some of your clothing, your water. I had my water filtration system in there. Then I'll have a sweet roll that attaches to the front handlebar. So it looks like a roll. And that had my sleep system in it. So I had a sleeping bag, a bivy sack, and a tarp. Once I got to Helena, Montana, I sent the bivy home and just had a sleeping bag and a tarp. That's what I used the rest of the way. And then a frame pack. I held extra water in the frame pack. And then two little pouches on the top tube that carried things that I needed quick access to. Some of the tools that I was using quite a bit. I kept my phone in there. Kept extra batteries in there. And then there are two feed bags that I had that I just shoved food in, because one of the things that you actually get tired of eating on this route, and they were called, my bags were all made by Revelate, with the exception of the frame bag. And these mountain feed bags are kind of round, and they sit off to the side of your on your handlebars, and you just shove them with food. And you know, I was trying to consume between 12 and 15,000 calories a day. And so I was trying to eat every single hour, and you got to have food handy. And that's what I was doing. And then I had a small bag, a ultralight backpack that I was using. And I didn't want to carry a backpack, but I found that I was having to carry so much food that, when I hit Steamboat Springs, I actually got a nicer, Osprey backpack to carry more food and water, since I was doing some of the longer stretches in New Mexico where there was no water available. I just really needed to distribute the weight more evenly. So I got an Osprey backpack. But that's pretty similar. Most of the guys are using a setup pretty similar to that are doing the ultra racing. When you get into the touring, they get more they tend to do the pannier, kind of the saddlebags, either on the front or the back, and they're not as worried about the weight as the ultralight racers are.
Right. Yeah, I imagine the food and water is probably one of the more difficult things to manage, because you don't have a lot of room to store it, nor do you want to carry that much weight. But there's probably got to be some pretty serious stretches in there before you could reprovision.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, so again, going back to that mental aspect, there are stretches like there's a stretch through what's called the Great Divide Basin in Wyoming, where it's this weird area where the water when it rains, the water will neither flow towards the east or the west. The Great Divide actually is the dividing line where water will flow towards the Mississippi or the Atlantic or the Pacific Ocean.
Right.
And the Great Basin, the water doesn't, it just sits there. It doesn't drain in either direction. And so you're going through an area that it's almost like a moonscape. There are no services. You're just riding for 100 plus miles until you can get some service out there. So basically you take off, and I rode that nonstop. I rode 200 plus miles. I think it was about 240 miles without stopping through the Great Basin, through the night. But the thing mentally is you're carrying about a day's worth of food to get you to the next stop. You're carrying maybe a day and a half of water if you're carrying extra water. And if you have a catastrophic mechanical failure, you're a three or four day walk out of there with only a day of food.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And again, when you're doing an individual time trial, that starts messing with your mind if you're not careful. So you gotta kind of control your emotion, control the mental, you know, kind of stay positive and know that you can get through this. I ended up the one thing I didn't I sliced the sidewall of my tire in the basin, as they call it. It was probably 2 a.m. I get this flat and I look and my sidewall sliced. And that's a repair that you could handle. You boot it up, but if that slice keeps going, you could get in some serious trouble. And I didn't bring a needle and thread. I had an extra tube, but I didn't have an extra tire. So I booted it up. It held there. The tube was good, and it got me through the basin. But boy, I was riding pretty gingerly, and I was very concerned about that tire until I got to a place where I could give it the attention it needed.
Wow, that's a good point. You know, this is obviously not something you just dive into with a regular mountain bike and no knowledge on how to fix it. And it's not even just a matter of, you know, understanding tools and understanding mechanics and to fix your bike. It's things like blowing out a sidewall, like you talked about, or a tip like stuffing grass into the tube or tire. I've never even thought about that, never heard about that, but it makes a lot of sense. You know, just ways that you can get through, and especially when you have that kind of limited food ration.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, there are really good resources out there that'll show you. I've seen people talk about it, and I've seen YouTube videos of people stuffing a tire with grass to get them to another location. It obviously would destroy your rim on the stuff I was riding on, but yeah, you definitely carry a lot of duct tape, you know, a lot of zip ties, and you hope you don't have to use that stuff.
Yeah, no doubt. Okay, so let's talk about a story or time that was just the best moment on the trail in this ride that you did.
I think it's funny because some of my best stories, even though the scenery, I walk away from the ride just while I was out there, I said, I will never do this again. I will, you know, and you leave and you hear that trail calling you back.
Right.
I mean, I've been home a little over 2 weeks now, and every single night while I was sleeping, I've had some dream about that Tour Divide route, just the beauty that I miss and the serenity, that kind of stuff. But probably one of my best moments was when I was in a really dark place, and so I'd gone again, it was one of my longer stretches. I'd done about 250 miles, about 30 minutes of sleep. I got to a place where I could just sleep, and I camped out. And I was actually the next leg was about a 70-mile stretch to Steamboat Springs where I was going to have my bike repaired. I'd been riding about 500 miles without a front brake caliper. I had failure in my brake. It just, the caliper wouldn't compress and release. So I was using only a back brake. So I'd gone a long day. I woke up in the morning. There was no place to get food. It was about 10 miles off route if I wanted to go to a gas station. And I had maybe 7 pieces of food. I had a couple bars, some beef jerky, you know, just not enough food to get me over the pass to Steamboat Springs. And again, things like this happen when you're fatigued. There's a place called Brush Mountain Lodge. Kirsten is one of those trail angels. She's one of these people that watches. She and Russ Kipp at High Country Lodge in Polaris, they're probably two of the most well-known trail angels out there. They actually watch the track leaders and watch the GPS trackers, and each rider that comes through, they take care of them.
That's cool.
And so they treat us all real well. Well, Kirsten and Brush Mountain Lodge were only 10 miles away, but I didn't pay attention to my cue note. I had cue cards telling me what to look for and what was going on, but I was so fatigued I wasn't paying attention to that. Instead, I was worried about my food situation. I decided I would go the 70 miles and I would just go easy. I wouldn't push myself too hard. I'd probably walk a lot because that wasn't enough food for breakfast, let alone lunch and the demands that I was going to put on myself that day. Well, I'm going up. I'm in the foothills in Slater, Colorado. I come around this turn and I just hear somebody. It's actually Kirsten running out saying, "Jim, Jim." And she runs out. She greets every rider with a hug and just takes care of the riders. I mean, so I went from a place where I was in a negative situation in terms of food. I had a big climb in front of me to get to Steamboat Springs. The day before I had done 250 miles. So I was just really in a bad situation. I come around this turn. I get greeted by Kirsten. Next thing I know, she's like, "Take off your shoes, sit down right there." I think I ate 9 or 10 blueberry pancakes. I had eggs, sausage, coffee, water. You know, she just took care of me. And then even before I left, she said, "Okay, take any supplies you need to make sure you can get to Steamboat." So I had the drinks, I resupplied and stuffed some food in my backpack. And, you know, when the swings that you go through, that epitomized what the Tour Divide's all about. Just going from really concerned to, man, I feel great and I'm going to enjoy this next leg. And that was definitely one of them that I'll never forget, because it just changed everything for me. And it showed me, you know, how quickly things can change out there on the Tour Divide.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, let's take a break and step aside from that stuff. Before we started this interview, you were telling me that you and your wife do an essential oils business, and I was a little intrigued because I'm not sure what all essential oils does for someone. So tell us about that.
Yeah. So we sell and educate people on the uses of Young Living essential oils. We've been doing that she's been doing it for over 13 years. I left my job in the corporate world as a VP of sales in June of 2014 and decided to join her. I've always been healthy. I've always pursued, you know, I've always had a healthy and active lifestyle, but really started using essential oils for recovery. So essential oils, these are volatile compounds you put on your skin. You know, most people have heard of lavender oil, but we have a whole array of oils that help you. So part of my experimentation with getting ready for the Tour Divide was seeing how oils can help me recover quickly. As of anyone over 40 years old would be considered a master's athlete. So it's not just the effort you put out on the course when you're racing or you're riding hard on a weekend, but it's how your body recovers. And a lot of that is getting the right sleep, managing stress in your life, getting the right nutrition. And then also it's getting the right supplementation. So what your body lacks or what you're not getting. So using supplementation, using essential oils, like, things like, just from natural plants that are out there, and putting those on my legs, putting them on my back, helping me breathe better, is what I do. And we do that full time now. So I did take just a handful because weight is so important to the Tour Divide racer. I had to limit myself with some of the oils I took, but every night I put lemongrass on my legs and copaiba. Those actually help ligaments and tendons. And I had a lot of problems with my Achilles tendons. The copaiba is an oil that really helps with inflammation. So I'd really oil up my legs each night. I'd elevate them. So I was doing some yoga poses. If I stayed in a hotel about every 3.5-4 days. So if I was in a hotel, I'd actually fall asleep with my legs up above the headboard until they just fall down, because I wanted to get all the blood out of my legs. Some people run into problems with edema, serious blood pooling in the legs.
Right.
So I was doing stuff like that just to make sure I gave myself a chance to finish the race without any serious injury.
Oh, very cool.
So.
Well, yeah, I'll have to check into it. I've not researched it much myself, but it sounds like something worth looking into. So where can people definitely go to find out about it, about your business?
You can go to youngliving.com or message me on my Facebook page, Jim Goodyear's Tour Divide 2016, and I can give you any information you need.
Okay, cool. Well, we'll put those links in the show notes as usual, and people can find you there.
All righty.
Okay. So we kind of hinted upon navigation there for a little bit, and I wanted to dig into it. So maps, GPS, both are things provided. How can one go about finding the routes that they would need to use to either run the time trial or just tour?
Yeah, a lot of good resources online, but you have to go to Adventure Cycling Association, their website, and buy the list of maps. So they have, I think it's a series of 6 or 7 maps. I think it's 6 maps plus the Colorado section. They are detailed maps. I mean, down to, at 67.7 miles, it's going to fork and you're going to go right. So highly detailed maps. They give you a good understanding of the elevation and what you're facing each day along the route. And they also sell a book that kind of goes through the real nitty gritty that could tell you, there's a primitive campsite here, or there are camping opportunities along this stretch. They tell you where water is. So though everyone that's racing and riding the Tour Divide, just about everyone out there has a set of these maps. If you're racing, they also have GPS coordinates. So we download GPS to our Garmin devices and basically follow a purple line. That's what we're doing most of the time. We consult the maps to understand kind of some of the elevation points and what we're getting into. But for the most part, I turn myself into a robot and follow that purple line on the GPS, and then consult the maps when I'm like, how long is this leg and what do I have left? Because sometimes you're like, it's only 13 miles into Silver City, but then you find out that you have to go through this Continental Divide trail that is basically for the most part unrideable. So you're pushing your bike for about 6 miles and you didn't really understand that. You should have paid more attention to those maps. But those are the two main ways that people are navigating the Tour Divide. They're using those two resources.
Okay. Yeah, I'll bet that, it seems like neither one, is something you want to do without, because obviously to have the maps in case the technology goes downhill is a definite. But at the same time, with limited food and water supplies, screwing up on your navigation skills on a map could really put you in a bad spot. So having that purple line is not a bad thing to have.
It is. There was a time, if somebody were to go back and look at my GPS track that I did on during the race, there was a time where this was fatigue and it was my fault. I thought we were going through a town called Rawlins. And in fact, there's so much construction in this little town that they're going to keep the route going through a town called Savory. In survival, there's this idea, they call it bending the map, where you, you know what the map, you saw a map and you know what it said, and yet your mind's trying to make you go somewhere you're not going.
Right.
And I got into that, and I ended up going in circles for a while. I just wouldn't follow my GPS. I didn't trust my GPS because I said, I've got to be going to Rawlins. And yeah, you can get in trouble if you don't have the right resources, if you're not paying attention. And even with the maps, even with the GPS, I spent about at least an hour or two going in circles until I figured out I'm just going to follow this purple line. and sure enough, it got me to Savory. So
we've all at one point or another had that same purple line try to make us drive a car down the bike trail. You know, so it's easy right. To doubt the thing at the same time.
That is. Yeah, you start doubting stuff like that.
It's funny. All right. We'd covered your best moment. What about your worst moment? Imagine in 2,700 miles, there's got to be a time where you just thought, I'm done. I'm not doing this anymore.
Yeah. So there were kind of two on, I'm glad this did. On the second day, I actually had my rain jacket fall off of my pack. And if this would have happened a week or two in, it was so demoralizing on the second day. It was cold enough and there were enough storms where if I didn't get my jacket, you know, potential hypothermia, I would have had to just set up camp to stay out of the rain. And I had to backtrack miles, and this was hours and hours of wasted time. So that was pretty demoralizing, but it happened early enough in the race where I was able to recover the next day. But again, I think the lowest point in the race was that leg going from Wamsutter to Savory, where I thought I was going to Rawlins. And I ended up, I actually ran out of water. I didn't resupply at Wamsutter the way I should have because I thought I was only going to Rawlins. And I was probably without water for 6 hours. It was very dry.
Wow.
I was in New Mexico. I ended up consulting my maps, and I found where there's supposed to be a little stream when it's wet in the winter. And I found a big culvert pipe that had some water, and I ended up filtering some highly questionable water. But I didn't get sick. The filter, my Sawyer mini pump did its job. I got a couple of bottles of water, but that was a pretty dark time when I was real close to calling it in, actually calling 911. And that was when I wasn't trusting my GPS. And the weird thing is I actually had cell phone coverage, but I didn't have any data coverage because for some reason my T-Mobile phone wasn't working on that network. So I actually called T-Mobile and I was like, you need to fix this because I'm lost and I need to figure out where I am and I need another device to verify what I'm doing here. And I had the T-Mobile tech support kind of trying to fix. They couldn't figure out the problem. They thought it was their network and not their phone. I don't know what the cause was, but I actually had the T-Mobile tech support looking up on track leaders to see where I was and overlaying that on a map. So I was doing everything I can, and I finally just said, forget it, I'm going to follow this purple line and it got me to Savory. But that was a pretty rough time to go without water, to be that fatigued after such a long time in the saddle. I pushed my body to a point where, you know, I wanted to quit. I actually had talked to my dad and I texted him and he's like, no, you can't quit. Keep going. And you know, that encouragement was something I needed at that point. Because I think he understood I was able to filter two bottles of water. So even though I was very thirsty, I was without water for 6 or 7 hours, I had water at the time. And I think what was happening is I was so fatigued from riding through the night for the last 20 plus hours that it was the fatigue that wanted to quit, not the you're dying of thirst wanting to quit. And those are two different things. And I managed to make it. I think I was 20 or 25 miles out of Savory, managed to get there, had a good night's rest, and you know, finish the race. But that was rough.
Yeah, I'll bet. 6 hours without water and you don't have a choice but to pedal to go get some. Yes. It's got to be just excruciating. I just can't imagine being dry that long.
Yeah, you're so hot. That was one of those really hot days too. So, yeah. But made it. Something I could look back on.
Yeah, no doubt. Makes for a good story at least, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, let's go into advice for people that would either want to just ride this as a tour or get involved in the actual race. And I got to think bringing a water filter has got to be at the top of that list.
Yeah, you have to have a water filter. You have to think through your shelter and your clothing. I mean, you're going to experience everything from downpours, freezing rain. Depending on the year, you could be at elevation running into snow. See, you have to be able to handle the elements. You have to be able to do some basic bike maintenance. You got to be able to filter your own water. You got to be able to carry enough water to get you to the next point. And you got to be able to ride. So you need to be in you know, I think, and people have proven this, you don't have to be a world-class athlete to complete this race. But you have to be determined. You have to have kind of a baseline of good health. You got to be able to spend long hours in the saddle. And depending on how many hours you could do a day, will determine when you finish.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like plan, and more plan. Study the maps, understand where it is you're going. And if you ever have to doubt yourself, at least maybe you can fall back on that planning and understanding.
Yeah, I think, you know, my thing was, is I there are a lot of good resources online. Again, Adventure Cycling Association, bikepacking.net has a great forum. You know, Facebook is a good place to go, because people that have completed, there's a, you know, once you finish the Tour Divide, you're in a small group. You're in kind of a small group of company there. And we want to encourage everyone to pursue it. If this is something you're considering or want to do, or it's on your bucket list, you're going to get nothing but cheerleading from all of the veterans that are out there. We want people to pursue this. We want to share as much information as we can. We want people to go out there and test themselves. So the information out there is readily available if you're willing to pursue it. And we want to encourage everyone to go out there and chase this dream, chase this race.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds amazing. Well, we'll definitely get those links up, like I said, so people can do a little research by going to our site and click through to those links if they want to look into it themselves.
Definitely.
All right. Last one. Plans. Do you think you'll do this one again? Do you have your sights set on others? What are your thoughts for the future?
Man, if I said I plan on doing this again, my wife, I hope she's not listening to this. I don't know. Again, while I was out there, I was telling myself, what did I do? Why am I out here? I hate this. And the very next sentence was, man, I'm having a great time. And I think, again, as soon as you leave the Tour Divide, you start thinking about it. I mean, the first full week I was home, I would wake up in the middle of the night going, where's my bike? Where's my bike? I gotta go. And it's amazing how 20 plus days in this race it just captivates you. And there are, I've spent some time on just looking at other ultra endurance race. I really respect all the men and women that pursue this ultra endurance self-supported racing. And there are a number of great races out there. There's the Trans Am, which is more of a road race that goes from Oregon to Virginia. There's the Colorado Trail Race. There's the Arizona Trail. There are some really good races out there, and I wouldn't put it out of question, but right now I'm letting my body recover, recovering from some adrenal fatigue that I have, and it might be something I pursue in the future. There's actually a race coming up in October that's a rally across Texas, and I've got some friends that are doing that, so I'm talking to them and supporting some of them and as they prepare for that big one.
But well, you're already talking to them about it. I bet you'll get drawn in. That's kind of how it works.
Yeah, I did the granddaddy of them all. So I could say most of them are in that 500 to 700 mile range. The Tour Divide, the 2,700 miles, that's probably the biggest off-road race. The Trans Am is over 4,000 miles on paved roads across the U.S. So different styles out there, but there is something about just being out on your own and saying, I'm going to conquer this, and pushing yourself. And I won't say no, but I don't have any plans right now.
Yeah, a little too soon to tell, I'm sure. So
that's right. All right.
Well, that was fun, Jim. I appreciate you sitting in and filling us in on the Tour Divide. It sounds like it's a blast. I would love to get up there and at a minimum tour it and take a lot longer to do it and just enjoy the scenery because I know how beautiful it is. So I do appreciate your time and coming and talking to us.
Well, thanks for having me, Travis. I appreciate it.
All right, my pleasure. And to our audience, until the next episode, get out there and try something new.
First of all, thank you so much for listening. It means the world to us that you choose to listen to this show. If you'd like to help us further, you can leave a review on iTunes, share us with your friends, your family. It goes a long way to grow in the show. You can also support us financially through patreon.com/adventuresportspodcast. Link is in the show notes. And also, if you have an idea of who could be a good guest for the show, we're always looking for people to tell their story about the outdoors or adventure. So if you know someone, please reach out. Email us at info@adventuresportspodcast.com. And until then, get out there and have some fun.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.